life. I'm Jason Snell. Welcome back to our Ted Lasso podcast. In this episode, we're talking about season 2, episode 2, Lavender, which we just watched. Let me introduce this fine panel of people who's going to talk about the episode with me. Casey Liss is here. Hi, Casey.
Easy, Jason. I'm not just a loser. I'm the loser.
James Thompson also joins us.
I apologize for almost every word I'm about to say.
Gene McDonald is here. Hello.
Hello. Just here to boost my brand.
And a first timer on the Incomparable Network, the San Francisco Chronicle's own Peter Hartlaub. Hello.
Hello. Jason, you know you're like a son to me. Now you're like a dead son, which makes me love you even more.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. By the way, before we get started, I just watched this episode a second time before we started recording, and I'm going to recommend for people who are so into Ted Lasso that they would listen to a podcast about it, that you should watch the episodes twice, because there's a lot of jokes that I missed the first time, or at least I didn't appreciate as much the first time. So you might want to even go back, give it a day to percolate a little bit. But like, there were several jokes that there's a Roy Kent line in particular that killed me this time that I didn't really notice because I was so busy following the plot. So I recommend it. This is a show, as we already learned from season one, this is a show that unfolds pretty well when you watch it a second time. All right, so Lavender is the name of this episode. And I think an interesting theme developing in this episode for what this season is about, which is that season one is all about, oh, Ted Lasso, he's so great. He's going to bring harmony and he's going to make people understand themselves. And Lavender is just the smell that's in the towels, right? Because the new Nate, whose name, what's his name?
I forget too.
Oh, I've got it in my notes somewhere. Anyway, the new Nate, who is Will, has put a lavender scented a fabric softener because his girlfriend likes it, and everybody else says it smells like a Parisian bedroom or like my Nana's house, and then later there's like the pineapple in the water that is being served on the pitch during practice. And that really gets Nate upset. Nate being mean to Will is an interesting inversion. But I feel like this is also like what this is about, which is things are too comfortable at AFC Richmond. And this episode is about Jamie Tartt, who has gotten kicked off of Celebrity Sex Island or whatever the name of his show is that he's on. He turns out he's abandoned soccer to do this stupid thing, is now desperate. And, you know, when he's photographed with Ted at the pub, everybody gets upset. And there's that key moment late in the episode where Sam says, it's great, we don't have fights anymore. And I'll grant you, we haven't won a game since he left. And he scores a lot of goals, but we don't want him here. And Dr. Sharon also says, I'm just cutting right to what this episode is about. Dr. Sharon says, you know, what do you mean if it ain't broke, don't fix it? Does not winning a game in 8 matches qualify as it ain't broke? And I was taken aback by this episode because it is, to me, this is the show's writers saying, we can't keep it perfect. Like season one feels like the show itself and the team, there needs to be some conflict. And so they're laying it out here, which is this is why they haven't won a match or lost a match, is that they're just too even Steven. And it leads to that moment at the end where Jamie walks onto the field and it's like, uh-oh, but it's also like, maybe this will light a fire under everybody. So I thematically, I think that this is the episode of season two that is laying down, like, this is what it's all about, which is the lavender scent. It's about, are we getting too comfortable here? Should we try to mix things up a little bit? What do you all think?
I think the thing that I like all of that, I think the thing that bothers me most is Nate, like his sort of,
he's being a jerk. Like,
he's like his sort of heel turn has come so quickly. It's the thing that I like the least about this. Although I think his line where he was talking about Jamie and saying, you know, it was terrible having him belittle people. And in the middle of the sentence, he turns around, belittles the new guy.
Yeah.
And then says,
Will, what a donut.
And then says, what was I saying again? That was a good line.
Yep.
But I don't like making him into the the bad guy of, I mean, he's not even
a little bit of a swelled head, right? Because now he's a coach, and so he's kind of forgotten where he came from, I think.
Yeah, I can see the plot reason for doing that. But as a wider thing, yes, I like the idea that they're too comfortable and they need to, they need multiple, like with, you know, the Dr. Sharon Fieldstone, she's kind of like, she seemed like she was going to be the antagonist to a certain degree. Yeah. And now it you know, we've got antagonism coming from multiple directions.
Yeah, for me, I actually didn't love the first episode of season two. I thought it was fine. I haven't had the chance to listen to Football's Life about it, but I thought it was passable. And this episode, for me anyway, was an absolute return to form. And this is the show I love so much. I was laughing throughout all of it. There was obviously, like you both have said, some conflict introduced and some actually in some way resolved with Doc. But nevertheless, I thought this episode was excellent through and through and really, really enjoyed it.
I think we have a little bit of a Friends Thanksgiving situation where the friends are all going their separate places, but then Ross's flight get canceled and Jennifer Aniston, you know, her parents bail on her and then they all end up together again. I feel like that's going on with Ted Lasso. Like, you've got to have a reason for Jamie to come back. And I feel like the first two episodes, we know these pieces are all going to come together again. I think Roy is going to be a part of the team soon. But I feel like we're waiting for that. And I thought especially the last episode, it was a little bit of a shortcoming, mixing my metaphors, but kind of like in The Office when Jim and Pam got together, then you've got to have some other stuff going on and you're kind of waiting for it. So I agree. I think the first episode was a little flat for me. This one, I feel like they're getting to their Thanksgiving and things are going to start happening.
I definitely, you know, watching the first episode, like just turning it on with trepidation of like, please, please, please don't, you know, mess up this show. There's so many shows I've liked so much, you know, for one season that haven't, you know, lived up to their, you know, what they accomplished in the first season, which is understandable. But I liked episode one. I mean, maybe I shouldn't settle for fine, but I did. I just said to my friend who I watched this with at the end of which I said, I hope they're bringing Jamie Tart back onto the show. I mean, like, and you know, and he's not just going to be like a joke sort of, you know, passing joke during Yoga Moms night reality stuff. But so I'm excited about that because, yes, they need something. And the reason that he's coming back, I couldn't have predicted, you know, I thought,
yeah,
they wouldn't take him back, like, you know, because he was, first of all, I didn't expect him to lose his job. And that just total crash of all his cockiness was really an interesting twist after, you know, after his talk with the agent who says he's dead to him. Dead son to him.
I agree with you. I didn't expect Jamie Tart to come back this way. And I, although I wasn't hoping that he would come back, I thought that that character could have gone off into the sunset, but obviously they like the actor and they, but the way they did it here, I like the idea that Ted says no. And then Sam has that conversation with him where he basically says, I think a really good point that he makes about Jamie, which is nobody's ever made me feel worse about myself than Jamie. And like, that's serious. And this is sort of what motivated Ted. And then he says, we haven't won since he was here. And I know he scores goals and all, but he's mean. And that's the moment where Ted's like, and he has to call in the Diamond Dogs to talk about it. Because the idea that Jamie Tart would come back, not just because we need to get all the friends back together in for Thanksgiving. Thank you, Peter. Very good. But because he is the annoyance. He is the sand that gets everywhere and is gritty. That's why they need him almost, is to kind of like spur them on. I thought that was a great use of Jamie, because that's like softening Jamie, blunting Jamie and making him not who he is. Like, he's kind of boring then, right? But if it's still kind of, he's trying to work on himself, presumably, but also he does give the team a little motivation. I love that as an idea.
I mean, I like the fact that even though, you know, he did the reality show basically to get at his dad, which was great motivation. But when he comes out of the studio of the This Morning, which, by the way, the This Morning is a real show, and Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby are real presenters of that.
Oh, really?
That is one of the things.
No idea.
Like, no wonder they're so good at it.
That's one of the sort of like second season things that I noticed in this, is the cameos are starting to amp up, and they might not mean anything to people on your side of the planet. But like, Philip Schofield spent most of my teenage years in a broom cupboard with a gopher presenting children's television. But anyway, but when Jamie came out of that, he actually, you know, stopped, spent time with the fans, and actually seemed like a vaguely decent human being. And I think, you know, I think he's kind of like, the fact that he, when he goes to Ted and, you know, Ted says, "How's it going?" And he does that whole line, and he starts off saying it's awesome. And then he kind of, I think you see that moment of him like, you know, I shouldn't just, you know, put on a front. I should actually tell the truth in this moment, which is like personal growth, which is good.
I did feel like there was a scene missing. And I love the character who plays Sam. I think it's Tohib Jamo. And he has such a disappointed look on his face, and then such a joyful look when Ted says he's not coming on the team, that I don't know. I felt like there was a scene missing where maybe the team should have voted if Jamie's coming back, or maybe Ted should have stated that it's something that Sam needs to be challenged by this. I felt like the only reason to bring him back was that conversation with the psychiatrist where she says, "Are you happy with eight ties?" And he says, "No, but it's not totally like Ted Lasso to make a move just to win." So I just felt there was like a piece missing there. I like where it's going for the show. But I did walk away a little bit perplexed.
And
maybe
Sam,
I slept through it.
When Jamie comes onto the field at the end, Sam looks more knowing and understanding than upset, which I did have a moment of like, we missed something there, I think, because whether they omitted it on purpose and we're going to find out more next time, I don't know. But there is that moment of like, does Sam, you know, psychically just know that Ted actually is doing this for his good or not? Like, it's not described. It's not explained.
The thing that confused me was there was like what looked like a time jump because there's the snow on the pitch.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that was like to indicate that some time had passed, like a few weeks or something. But then it was weird because it was the first time that the doctor had met the rest of the team. And I was like, oh, so is this like the next day or something? So I just wondered, because it was a weird transition that they did with the snow. And I thought, well, maybe some time has passed and they're all okay with it, or at least they knew about it before he walked out.
But, you know, one of the things, though, I was thinking about this bringing Jamie back is not that they're bringing him back to win, although that was definitely part of the motivation, but it was a true Ted Lasso motivation that we, you know, saw throughout season one, which is like, Jamie has a terrible dad.
Right.
And we have to cut him some slack, even though he's can be such a terrible person. And I mean, I remember some of those early scenes with Jamie taunting Sam, like the worst kind of, you know, insulting, family insulting, you know, garbage that, I don't blame him for not wanting him back. But it is, I mean, we did see a little bit of Jamie's dad at the end of season one, and
he's awful.
It seems like he should, you know, he should have a little bit more help from, you know, good dad, Ted Lasso, and be in his safe hands. I love that notion, you know, that Sam's dad said, like, you're in safe hands with Ted Lasso.
Right.
That's not what you think of for coaches in soccer and professional sports.
There was a thing when they were in the pub and they were having the discussion, and Ted said that, you know, his father was harder on himself than he was on Ted. I have this sort of, I don't know, feeling like, so my best guess is that Ted's dad committed suicide.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that is going to come up.
So, James, I think there's two scenes in this episode that lead in that direction that I think they're laying the groundwork for. And obviously, so there's the scene where he talks to Dr. Sharon. And what's interesting is that they're both very introspective people. I think he really impresses her when she says she doesn't eat sugar because, not because, like the sitcom joke was last week, right? Which is, I don't eat sugar. And it's like, how do you not eat sugar? And she says this time, like she would inhale a whatever it is, basically a candy bar.
Cadbury flake.
And then talk straight for an hour and then pass out. And she's like, he says, it's like me with video games. And it's this amazing bit of Ted Lasso self-analysis, which is like, I keep telling myself I'm doing this for my betterment. But in reality, I'm just depriving myself of something that makes me happy. And I should probably think about that. And it's this moment where, like, he's doing some self-analysis. But when she tries to analyze him, he basically is like, I'm out of here. So he doesn't want to talk about what's troubling him because he thinks, like, he doesn't want to be analyzed. And then he goes and talks to Rebecca. And they both agree that nobody should really see a therapist because you can just share with your friends, and they both agree, and at which point they ask themselves, do you have anything to talk about? They both say, nope, nothing to talk about, and they leave. And so it's very clear when Dr. Sharon says at the end of the episode, I'd like to talk with you sometime, that one of the stories that's going on here is Ted needs to talk about his feelings, right? Like, personally, on the inside, the stuff that he doesn't let out. He's great at taking care of everyone else, but clearly there are things going on. And so James, when he talks about his father in that moment, I thought, well, this is all part of that, right? Which is Ted needs someone to talk to, and that Dr. Sharon is a threat to him, not because she's going to make him weaker with the team or anything like that. She's a threat to him because she sees through him and knows he needs help, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I could see, like, the stress of the situation and everything on him. Like, he's going to get to... I mean, it was like, you know, 3/4 of the way through the last season where he had a panic attack and
right.
stuff. So... You
about
know,
the divorce, right? That was sort of phase one of the psychology of Ted Lasso was going through his...
But I think there's a lot of like father and son stuff in this season particularly. And I think, yeah, that's where we're going to end up. That's my guess anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
Apple has not sent us screeners yet.
No, we don't. I wish.
I do think every time Jamie's dad's like throwing a shoe at him or something, I'm like, how old is Jamie? Because when I hit like 19, I mean, I think even Gary Coleman cut his parents off at like 18. And I just, how did his dad get in the locker room? I feel like he could cut his dad off. I have some good advice for Jamie.
I think it's a Britney Spears dad kind of situation here a little bit, where he's like so abusive to him that it's become this codependent relationship, and that Jamie, like, this is part of Jamie's problem, is that this toxic parent is allowed to keep, like, he keeps his dad around, and you're right. I think he could push his dad away. And maybe going on Celebrity Sex Island or whatever it's called. I don't care. It's fine. I think my name is funnier. Anyway, I think that was him trying that. But yeah, I agree. Like, I think that's part and parcel. Jamie is like, why is he letting his dad be around? And I think it's because Jamie is that broken that he. I want to mention something, a soccer thing, which is. That scene with the agent is really funny, but the agent is a little bit broad there. And talk about missing scenes, Peter. I think this might have been a missed opportunity or something where they trimmed it. Because what I really would have liked the agent to say, it wouldn't have been as funny as you're like a dead son to me. But like he should be saying, like, well, you do have options because there's a bazillion soccer teams, right? There, and even though he's radioactive, and he could have played that up, I think, even more, like, by abandoning your team, nobody wants to sign you. But like he could have gotten... Somebody, you know, Major League Soccer will take Jamie Tartt, right? They'll take anybody. Oh, boy, I'm going to hear from those fans now. But he could have said, you've got options, but they're all really bad. And I kind of wanted the agent to say, you know, if you really want to rehab, you may want to go back to Richmond, that Ted Lasso seems to like you, and him being like, oh, no, right? But instead, they just simplify it down to no one will take you, which... you know, from a reality standpoint, it's not true. Somebody would sign him. I think the point is that nobody he would sign with will sign him.
Well, plus it puts the onus on Jamie to make that journey himself, right? Like
right.
if the agents just said, oh, you know, you could go back to Ted, then there's no real growth on Jamie's part. But if Jamie is, or I think what we're supposed to believe is that Jamie is left with no options. And so
right.
you know, he goes to Keeley.
I'm just saying it's not really true. So I would have liked a line that was sort of like, I can get you on a bad team that's terrible, that's in America, and have him be like, no, 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 no. And then he has to look within himself, because it's not like, sure, literally, if you're a soccer player as talented as Jamie Tartt, even if you're radioactive because of your bad behavior, someone will sign you. If yeah, following sports has taught me anything, is that the worst people right, in the world still get second chances.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, he also did get the option of taking ecstasy every night for 3 weeks. So,
that's true. You know, one of the things I loved about this episode and this television show in general is the very, very subtle and quick jokes. And a great example of that is here in this scene where the agent gets on the phone with, you know, I'm using major air quotes here, gets on the phone with Real Madrid and then hangs up. And Jamie says, Didn't you speak Spanish? Like, that's the thing he's concerned about. Not the fact that the phone call was so obviously false, but that the agent wasn't speaking Spanish. And there's so many good, like, not zingers, but like little one-liners or little like quick jokes that, like you had said, I didn't catch the first time.
I completely didn't see the first time the Led Zeppelin joke where Higgins on the box
exactly,
with the
plant, yep.
And he calls it Robert because it's Robert Plant, and he pulls out the piece of paper and he says, Jimmy Paper? Oh, Jimmy Page. I really blew that one, didn't I? I was just like, I missed Robert Plant entirely. I got Jimmy Page.
Oh,
I'm
too.
Like, well, I don't understand this. It's like, it's just so fast that, there's a bunch of those. The one that I'll put it out there. The one that I didn't laugh at the first time because I was, okay, there's the moment where, great moment, where I haven't really talked about Roy and Keeley. And Roy, they got the big final for his season of coaching the girls' soccer team, which is amazing. And they get their trophies and he says it's a pleasure. And they just smile and love him. And it's so great. I love it. But he goes home and Keeley is wanking. And he says, like, you need to show me what was getting you off there. Like, it's a very adult kind of thing. It's like, don't be embarrassed. You need to show me. And she ultimately shows him that it's his press conference where he's tearfully retiring from soccer, and that she likes him being vulnerable and it really gets her off, which is just an amazing twist. But in between there is this moment where he says, I'm going to make it, essentially, he's like disarming it and saying, I will tell you what gets me off. I like watching couples have sex in the woods. And the first time I watched it, I was like, well, that's really weird and funny and great. I missed the second line, which is, I could never be that free. What? That killed me. That absolutely slayed me.
So good.
I'll say the one thing about that scene, like just prior to that scene, that made me uncomfortable was they were clearly setting it up for you to think that he was coming back and she would be in bed with Jamie.
Yes.
Right? Or watching video of Jamie, right?
Yeah. Yep. Or watching a video of Jamie. And that, I didn't like that uncomfortableness in my Ted Lasso, but you know, I loved that the remaining of the scene, like, when she throws the phone away and comes up with a ridiculous excuse.
One of this show's moves is we're going to make a move that makes you think that that it's going to go a certain way because you've been trained by lots of sitcoms to go that way, and then we're not going to go that way. And that's what they're doing here. And I agree. You're like, are they setting up a weird thing here? And then, of course, they're not. Of course not.
Well, they do that again at the end with Keeley and Roy as well, where he gets down on his knees, and I'm like, really? Yes. He's going to propose to her?
In a way.
In a manner of speaking.
So Roy and Keeley, I mean, I think this is one of the challenges of season two as well, right? It's like, oh, and well, they're happy. Yay. Right? And so, but it's like, that's not dramatic. And it's also not, life keeps going on and they keep having challenges, right? That's how life works. And so we get this thing of like, Roy is kind of lost and he's kind of put all of his thoughts into coaching this girls' soccer team, which is great. And they love him and he loves them. And I love everything about Roy Kent, but there's this other, be a pundit, right? Be a sports pundit. Mm-hmm. And he resists it. And he finally like is willing to do it. And he enters the studio to Anarchy in the UK. Amazing. And
that was awesome.
And then he's just being Roy Kent. And he's like everybody else in that scene. For those of you who are sports fans. So Casey and Peter, I guess, more than Gene and James, maybe. But it's every sports talking head show ever, right? They're like, fine. They both tried. You know, everybody did okay today. And then Roy Kent is like, they did not do okay. Chelsea should be ashamed of themselves. They were terrible. They were terrified of Man City. And it's just, I love that. But I also just, any Roy Kent is Yeah. Get me as much Roy Kent as you can.
Yes.
Basically.
In that segment, I didn't pick up on it at first, but so two of the people are actual football pundits from a real Sky Sports.
Oh, don't steal my moment, James. I was all proud of myself when I realized this. Go ahead.
Okay, no, you've
but
got
the
it.
Other guy. I'm
passing the ball to you, because I am a team player.
You're the reformed Jamie. No, you're going to say that Gordon, to Roy's right, screen left, is the old Richmond coach.
Yep. Yes. The fired Richmond coach.
Yes.
The
yes. Which
coach.
I was like, wait, I the know that guy. Liam. Where do I know him from?
Liam and Noel.
Liam, but not an Oasis.
Yeah. I was very surprised to see him make another appearance. And I was very proud of myself when I realized, oh, wait. That's the old
that
coach.
Guy. Yep. This guy with his very short shorts.
I was worried about Roy and Keeley. Because I thought this is, again, you know, like an office thing where this is just going to be fan service because they've gotten together. Then what do? You give fan service. The fan service has been so good with the yoga moms. I mean, even better than, and that was purely a, you know, something we all wanted to see. But the writing is so good. If they just want to shovel fan service with those two, like Cole and a locomotive, I'm here for it for at least like four episodes and then maybe have some conflict. But
after you know they've done the three seasons of this, if they want to do the spin-off show focused on those two, I will totally watch.
I mean, I've been married for more than 25 years, right? Like, so my perspective on this is so many TV relationships, they think they can't get together, and when they do get together, there's this feeling like they can't stay together. And I think I've always thought that was stupid. Like, of course they can. Lots of people do, and it's not the death of drama that two people are together. So like, Keeley's gonna have stuff going on this season. Roy's definitely got a story arc. I'm fascinated. I think there's so much to dive into about what happens when a professional athlete who was a star has gotten to the end and has no idea what to do with their life. And, you know, that their relationship can be solid and that they can help each other and that can still be, yes, we can still have all those amazing moments with them together while they're still also like valid parts of the ensemble because they have their own stories to do. Their relationship doesn't have to be their story. So like, yeah, give me the happy Roy and Keeley stuff and let them push and pull at each other and try to make each other better. But at the same time, like with Roy, I don't know whether Pundit is going to be his thing or whether he's ultimately going to come back to Richmond where he could be a coach maybe and learn from Ted Lasso. I don't know. I don't know where they're going, but
I think he's going to coach the team. I think before the end of this season or next season, this panic attack issue with the psychiatrist is going to get Ted Lasso. He's giving and giving and giving to everybody, and he's going to break. Mm. I think the Pundit thing is going to be some great entertainment. Again, I hope we get one or two more episodes of it because that was so fun.
It's so good.
And then I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this season, you know, going from coaching the girls to having parallels to coaching the team, if Roy Kent ends up being.
I
know nothing.
But. I do wonder sometimes if one of their secret story arcs for this show is the development of Roy Kent and that he's got all of the soccer credibility and he needs to get in touch with the stuff that Ted Lasso and now Keeley also are helping him get in touch with. But like Roy Kent, the player, couldn't be a good coach, but Roy Kent, who learns from Ted Lasso, could be a great coach. Like, and plus he understands soccer, which means he would be a better soccer coach than Ted Lasso. But he doesn't understand sort of like interacting with human beings as well as Ted Lasso does. So like, I agree with you, Peter. He's going somewhere. Because that character is so amazing, but also it is this great arc of him learning to be, because he's obviously still not all the way there, right? He's still just yelling at people on television, but he's getting there. He's a work in progress, aren't we all? But he's getting there. And so I think I think the idea of paralleling the girls' soccer to being a coach, even if he's not the head coach, he's working with Beard and Nate and Ted, and then perhaps that's part of the issue with Ted that he has to step up and help. I think that's a great idea.
I mean, it could even be at the end of season three, Ted goes back and leaves Roy as head coach.
I think that's ultimately where the show is going to go at the end, is that Ted's going to leave and go do something, you know, be a coach in America again. I do think that that's where the show will end.
It's basically like Kung Fu, you know, he sort of rocks up into a situation and fixes it and then moves on.
That's right.
Do you think the show will follow Ted, or are we going to have like a Jeremy Renner Mission Impossible situation?
I So it's funny. We're this has had nothing to do with episode two, but let's speculate a little bit. Why not? We're here. We got the podcast for this week, so all of us can just take this wherever we want. They've said it's three seasons, and that's the story they want to tell. And specifically, Jason Sudeikis has said, "My kids are in America. I don't really want to be spending extended time shooting in the UK." So I think what he said was something like, unless Ted moves back to America, I think three seasons is it. And I had that thought, which is like, well, like, you could tell some stories at Richmond without Jason Sudeikis, and you could also tell some stories of Ted Lasso going back to America, and maybe they never will. Maybe it'll be this perfect three season thing and that'll be it. But I'd be open to that. I keep thinking that the end game for Ted Lasso is that he's going to be so successful here that he will be able to go home and maybe be a football coach again. And because he's shown that he can succeed at any sport, maybe he'll be a basketball coach. He'll get an NBA job. It's like, it doesn't matter.
It could be like a Crocodile Dundee 2 situation where, like, you bring some of the British people into America and then you do the reverse tale. So, you know, you can imagine Nate in the middle of something.
He's going to coach the Kansas City MLS team.
Yeah. I think, you know, one thing that piqued my interest at the very end was Dr. Sharon saying to Ted, Prince of Tides, because Ted didn't go like, oh, you know, that's your favorite book. Like, which, if you know the book, The Prince of Tides, you know, the hero is the psychologist or psychiatrist.
But prediction, I think he's going to be reading Prince of Tides in episode three.
But, you know, Prince of Tides is a very disturbing story about a football player whose father is abusive and sexually abusing his sister as well. Like, the whole it's like possibly the darkest father son combo in literature. And so if that is where they're, when Ted said like, well, my father, he was harder on himself than he was on me, doesn't mean he was a good guy.
Right.
And that's also like kind of the thing like people say when they want to let somebody off the hook is like, oh, they're horrible to me, but they're really bad to themselves or whatever. So anyway, if Dr. Sharon is supposed to be Dr. Lowenstein or Barbara Streisand, if you're in the film version, and Ted is supposed to be Nick Nolte, Tom Wingo, then I predict we got like some much heavier content coming our way. And they don't bring up books, like, they don't throw off titles lightly in this series,
other than The Fountainhead, which he says, no, I can explain. It's not what you think.
Right. Right. You know, I mean,
but no, that's great. You're right. I had not even thought of that, because I don't think I've even seen the movie of Prince of Tides, but that is about a coach who's having deep problems, right? Like,
There's a lot of parallels between the two. Even the white knighting scene with the darts last season, very, very similar, about, you know, not an ex-husband, but about to be ex-husband. And I'm going to say the Nick Nolte character, because I don't know. I read the book too. There's a scene with a Stradivarius that is very, very similar to that dart scene.
Wow.
In a white knighting situation that isn't called out for such, because I don't know that they use that term. But yeah, there are a lot of parallels there.
Wow. So do you think then that Dr. Sharon said that specifically to make a point to Ted, or do you think that's legitimately her favorite book? Because you could see that going either way, right? You could see it going.
She doesn't seem like a game player to me. I think she probably means that legitimately. She is a sports psychologist, so that would be probably influential to her to think about sports and people involved in sports and their psychology. That's a book about sports people and psychology in a way. So, she doesn't seem like a faker to me. I think that it's legitimately her favorite.
I think the writers did it just to get people to read Prince of Tides. I mean, show of hands, how many people are going to read it on their next vacation?
Right.
I think I'm there.
And speaking of Dr. Sharon,
the movie.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Speaking of Dr. Sharon, I was really, really, really pleased to see her kind of warm up this episode. When we met her last episode, I don't know, she was very striking and very strong. I'm trying to use kind words here, and my reaction to her was also strong. This episode, I felt like we rounded her out a lot, and I really, really appreciated that. And I felt like it was a much fuller and more enjoyable character by the end of this episode than I found her to be at the end of the first episode.
I think that's like one of the sort of defining traits of Ted Lasso in season one, is it introduced all these characters who weren't who you thought they were.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Hopefully, yeah.
Although, but her, like, I just love her sneaking up in the stands.
Right? It's like, is she getting closer? It's like, well, that's a metaphor, Coach. That's really what that is. No, she's in the back, and then she's in the middle, and then she's at the front.
Yep.
Every time we see her, it's just just a dumb joke, but so good.
It's a dumb joke executed well, which is so much of this program. Yep. And this episode as well, like the whole traveling Higgins thing, where every time he has his plant and his box and his computer and his, you know, thing of pens, his pen caddy or whatever, and he always knocks over the pen caddy, you know, that is a funny joke even when not done well. Like, it's just still a funny gag, but it's done so deftly and so maturely in this show that I find I laugh at it harder because it's less maybe I'm just not sophisticated, but it's less expected, and I feel like it's done so much more subtly. Like, obviously it's not an intrinsically subtle joke, but it's the hand they take to it is a subtle hand.
So Higgins, we should talk about him a little bit. So he gave his office to Doc Sharon's, right? So he has no place to go. There's that scene with Rebecca where she's like, you can take someone else. How about Caroline in ad sales? And he's like, no, she's having a breakup right now. And besides, she's next to the laughing guy. I thought that was a great moment of like, I don't want to be near them. And then there's the very tense scene with Sam and Ted, and they have that whole conversation. And then he knocks over the thing and he's in the weight room on like a weight bench. And that's a good moment. But where is it going? And the answer is they put him with Nate. And Nate doesn't look super happy about it, but he's like, all right, yeah, we'll share. You come down here and be with the Diamond Dogs. And I thought, well, I think this is the show saying, Nate and Higgins, that is an interesting pair. Let's put those two guys together and probably address what's going on with Nate, who is being kind of too aggressive here. And of course, Higgins, who is very reluctant, but also has, like, he's the one who says, yeah, you should bring back Jamie, right? Like, I think that they're going someplace interesting with Higgins and putting him with Nate there. So that's the resolution of this, is he's going to be bunking in with Nate. Although not literally sleeping there, only Coach Beard sleeps in the locker room.
Right.
Yeah. Perchance to dream.
Perchance. It was kind of interesting, though, because there was that whole scene with Dr. Sharon, you know, is apparently on staff now.
Yeah.
And he's like, Ted's like, you didn't ask me about this. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was brilliant. Right? I should have. Oh, no, you shouldn't. You should not.
You're the director of football. You tell me what to do. And he's like, no, whatever you say, Ted. He's like, no.
Yeah.
And finally, when he does do it right, he looks at Beard and Beard's like, no, you can't say it. He's like, oh, right.
Beard's
right.
Like telling him, don't say. Stay. But then Ted does to Nate what Higgins did to him, which is, hey, just take over with Nate.
Yep.
You know, he obviously had not asked Nate in advance.
Doesn't look like
And I mean, that's okay. I think he's the coach. He can say whatever he wants to, but it's sort of funny that this business, I mean, I would not be very comfortable in an organization where people kept doing that kind of a grand gesture without actually clearing it with the people who are affected.
I think he was probably thinking, oh, it'd be great, we'll have all the Diamond Dogs together, and just didn't really think through the full extent of that.
Well, Nate is probably concerned with his status, right? Because he was just, he probably has some imposter syndrome going on, which is probably what's going on with him yelling at Will. And so this is maybe a status thing, although Higgins is also the big boss. He's the head of football operations, and Nate's going to be in the same office with him. I don't know where it's going, but I think that this is the show saying that we have some good ideas about putting those two guys together. And that works for me, I think.
I really like that the dominoes that fell with the shortbread and everything ends up with the psychiatrist getting a welcome basket filled with different kinds of bottled water.
Yeah. No, there's other things that don't have sugar in them.
Right. That's a great example of a joke I missed the first time. Keeley saying there's other things that don't have sugar. I totally whiffed on that the first time I watched. And then I saw it, you know, this morning I watched a second time and I was laughing so hard when she said that.
Honestly, I think one of my favorite kinds of comedy is a smart show that tells dumb jokes. Like, I will sign up for any smart show that does really dumb jokes because I love that combination of like, we know this is dumb, but it's funny, right? Like, so Dr. Sharon coming down every time they cut over, she's closer. Like, again, that's a dumb joke. We detailed a lot of them here. They're so good. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention when I was talking about Roy that not only is he upset that the guy that he hates sent him flowers, he says, how does he know I love white orchids? It's like, what? It's amazing.
It's such a throwaway line, but it means something,
it's Roy has layers, right? Like, it's just yet another unfolding of the mysteries of Roy Kent.
It's like his cooking and doing the shopping and all those kind of things as well. You know, it shows that he's actually participating in the relationship. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I'm glad he got the beard trim, you know, for his pundit job.
Ah, yes.
The beard was kind of bugging me because, you know, whatever. It's just not
it's a scraggly beard. Well, also the thing I noticed is that Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy and is one of the writers as well, he has been this whole first part of this season up until the point where he's on TV. He's been doing the gruff Roy Kent, right? Like, it's almost like a Cookie Monster kind of voice that he's doing. And he didn't always do that last season. And I think it's like, that's supposed to be depressed. I'm out on my own. I'm trying to be mean because it's all I know, Roy Kent. But the moment he's on TV, he's not that guy anymore. He takes that right out of his voice. So I thought that was, I was happy to hear that because I don't need Roy Kent to sound like Cookie Monster all the time.
That's a really good point. Wanted to explore a couple of minor things in the Jamie and Ted conversation. First of all, do you know what he was eating? It looked to me like shepherd's pie. And my wife, Erin, had pointed out to me, like, last season, I think pretty much every time we saw him in the bar, he was eating fish and chips, if I remember correctly. And so here, I think he was eating shepherd's pie. I'm looking
last
at you, James.
Last week, too, they were eating shepherd's pie.
Okay, so that was Erin's point was, hey, I think we're establishing this season's cuisine at the bar, which I thought was very funny. But another thing I really liked at the bar was, and I don't know how to verbalize this well, which makes it difficult for a podcast, but they said, you know, Ted Danson is the male version of Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes.
And that, like, that very subtle...
Who is the female version of Dave Grohl.
Right, yes. Exactly. But, like, that subtle, like, flipping, you know, you would typically hear, oh, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the female version of Ted Danson. Mm-hmm. And that subtle flip is another example of, I think, them doing something so well and so deftly where they're just kind of flipping something on its head and you don't even think about it in the heat of the moment. And then you go back, wait, they just did that and it didn't even register to me. And I thought that was very well executed.
It's also, I mean, I wonder, you can overanalyze anything, including Ted Lasso, but I thought that was an interesting thing to talk about because the idea there is these are people who had repeated success, right? Which I would think would fascinate a coach, right? The idea, because coaches always talk about, like, it's the John Wooden path of excellence and all those things, right? There's lots of stuff that goes on in motivation stuff and coaching. And so it's like, well, Ted Danson, he had his one hit and that's all he ever had. Julia Louis-Dreyfus didn't just have the one hit. Dave Grohl was in Nirvana and then did Foo Fighters, right? Like, what is it about these people that allow them to have multiple teams, if you will, that excelled that they were a part of? And I not to overanalyze it, but that ticked a little box in me of, like, of course a coach would be interested in something like that.
And don't sell Dave Grohl's death metal side project Probot short.
Throw that it was, in there.
Another good one. Throw it in there.
One of the greats.
I never sit there and think, God, what is it like to be Dave Grohl on stage and being in Nirvana? But I do, like, when I hear a reference like that, think, I wonder if Dave Grohl and Ted Danson watch Ted Lasso, and how cool would that be to just hear that reference straight? I'd be bringing my kids inside and showing them.
Oh, I would too. I absolutely would.
Oh my God. It's also a good moment for Jamie to say, I named my army man Ted for Ted Danson. Gotcha, Ted. And Ted's like, good choice. Excellent. He's one of the great Teds out there. Yep.
Wasn't there a tweet this week from Diane Sawyer, was it?
Yes.
Because there was a reference last week.
Yep. Yeah, there was a mention about Twitter where he mentioned to Sam that, it's a crazy world out there. Like, there's even a Twitter account about my mustache, which is a true story.
Which is a real, and that account just tweeted a wave emoji yesterday.
Yep.
So I just hope that Diane Sawyer didn't get a call from her agent that, like, she was, like, at 12:01 on Friday tuned in because she's a huge Ted Lasso fan and just ran into it randomly. That would be the best way.
I think so. One other random joke that I wanted to mention here is, so this show uses Annette Badland, the excellent English actress, as May, the bartender or owner of the pub, whatever her role is there. And she's great. She doesn't say much or do much, but she's always there to dispense some wisdom, which I like. I'm very amused by that. But then when Jamie tells the guys to stop looking at him and she just yells at them and they turn around, what Jamie says is, old people are so wise. They're like tall Yodas.
Yes.
Not only is they're like tall Yodas such the weirdest thing to say, but it's like hanging a lantern on the fact that, I mean, that's sort of been May's role all along, right? Is that she's so wise. And he's like calling it out. She's so wise. Mm-hmm. Yes, she is. She's like a tall Yoda. Is Annette Badland. It's great.
I like that there was no soccer in this one. I've been thrown off the last couple of times. And it's kind of like Game of Thrones early on. Like when there was a battle, it was just off scene. And you could have it in your head what that battle was like. And then they got enough money that they could actually stage the dragons. Ted Lasso, once you started seeing the soccer, what was in my head was better than what was out there. And Ted Lasso was a much better coach. So I actually liked having an episode with like less soccer and more into the people. And I'm kind of hoping they keep on that track this season.
Something that I've struggled with as I'm, evangelizing this show is I'll tell somebody, oh, you need to watch Ted Lasso. The soccer show? Oh, I don't care about soccer. No. You don't get it. It's not about the soccer. It's a MacGuffin. And I agree. Like I do enjoy when there is some amount of soccer in the season, but in a particular episode, I agree that it doesn't necessarily need to have like some soccer quota or something like that in order to make me happy.
Unless it's the 9-year-olds show all the 9-year-olds.
Well, the only
go
ahead.
I'm sorry, Jason. I keep stepping on you. Something else I wanted to bring up was I feel like we've kind of obliquely talked about this earlier, but I think we're setting up for Sam to have some real honest growth and to become, I think, a much stronger character in this season. And to see him get so visibly upset with Ted and then talk it through with him and make a stand. I loved Sam last season, but there wasn't a lot of depth there. And I feel like we're really setting the stages for Sam to have considerably more depth. And I'm really into that. And I'm really hopeful that we'll see more of that as the season goes.
I'm pretty sure he's going to be captain at the end of this.
I think you're right.
One of the things that I couldn't understand what it was they were trying to say is right at the end, when Jamie has gone out onto the pitch, Rebecca kind of looks at Keeley and smiles in a weird
way. What was that?
And I didn't understand, like, was she like, finally, my plan is, going into motion? Or was it like, I'm so proud of her, she's like, grown up and she actually doesn't mind that her ex is like coming back to the club and things like that. And I didn't know what they were meaning.
Yeah, I couldn't get a read on that either. I'd be curious to hear what y'all think.
Yeah, I noticed it the second time through and I thought, I don't entirely understand that look either. It seems very meaningful.
I thought she was rooting against the team last season, so I felt like it was maybe her character turn that she's actually wanting this team to win now. That was my takeaway.
That could be.
Show is ruining lavender for me, and I'm sad because I do have lavender dryer bags, and I do like to have dried lavender, and I do use lavender scents to relax.
Are you
and
putting pineapple in your drink now too?
I'm like, well, is my apartment a Parisian bedroom or is it a Nana's house? And I'm going to have to, I might have to switch scents for a while.
Right. And it's funny because I think, you know, obviously the metaphor here is that just like we're making it nicer and maybe they're too comfortable. And I'm not sure I believe that entirely, right? And I'm not sure the show does either, but it's a very sports thing to be like, why are we being nice to them? Why are we making it more pleasant here? Don't we want them to be on edge so that they win? And I hope that the show is going to do, and I have actually some confidence because this is Ted Lasso, that the show is going to be more nuanced than that. That it's not ultimately like we need to irritate everybody because winners are irritated. But it is essentially what is going on here, which is we don't want there to, you know, we don't want calm athletes, Nate says. We want killer athletes, to which Coach Beard says, you know, when they're showering, like, do we care? By the way, something that during the rewatch, one of the episodes I was on the rewatch of season one, I mentioned this theory that I'm going to just throw out here again. It's not really a theory. It's a thing that the show is doing that I enjoy, which is Coach Beard is the star of his own TV show that we only see in the background. And we get one scene of that here, which is that Jane threw his keys in the river, and so he slept at the stadium in the locker room the previous night. And that is a relationship, and the details and whatever he's doing, like we keep seeing little moments of it, but it's always in the background. And you know, and we also don't know his full name. He's just Coach Beard. And it's like, there's another show that is happening that we don't get to see that is the adventures of Coach Beard and his love interest, Jane, and playing chess and whatever else that he's doing in his life. So I just wanted to call that out again. Watch in the background, Coach Beard. There's stuff going on, but we don't get to see it. I love it.
Maybe it'll be the Better Call Saul will be Coach Beard prequel.
There's your spinoff right there.
Yeah, it'll be whatever his first name is, Beard, and that'll be the new show title. But we don't even know what it is yet because his first name is like is what Norm's wife and who else? One of those things. People that are never seen in a TV show. His first name is never seen in Ted Lasso.
I did also like just the gratuitous Spinal Tap reference that was in there. There was a Mime is Money.
Yes, I was going to mention that. I was going to mention other like quick hit just jokes that are funny. I like the reference to that Ted makes that he's spicy like Nando's Peri Peri sauce, which shows that Ted has been acclimating a little bit to being in the UK. And I enjoy the fact that when everybody in the locker room sees the picture of Ted talking to Jamie and they're aghast, and Danny Rojas's response is, "Oh, look, they're sitting on his hand."
Yep.
That's the best you can do because Danny Rojas is just throwback. A figure of joy. Yeah.
I didn't realize this, that the actor who plays him was actually a professional footballer.
Yeah.
And said the footballer's lifeline in the audition, and they just said
each other.
I said, like, write that down.
Very nice.
Football is also football, though.
Yes.
Yep.
It is. All right. Well, I think we've reached the end of our talking about the future of Ted Lasso. Talking about episode 2. We got some theories. We got some comments. I'll go around one last time. Thank my panelists, and if you've got any final words about how you felt this episode did, last chance to share. Casey Liss, thank you for being here.
You know, it feels good to be back around the game.
All right. James Thompson, thank you.
Wait, George Harrison died?
Gene McDonald, thank you.
I don't know why I would pay someone to do this when my friends do it for free.
And Peter Hartlove, thank you so much for coming on. Sort of a last-minute addition. It was great to have you.
Yeah, I'm a longtime incomparable listener, and I've listened to this podcast, so this felt like a fantasy camp for me. had a very good time.
Well, you know, you'll have to come back sometime. It was great having you here.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening to the constantly changing, ever-changing panel of Football is Life. Our roster is even larger than that of AFC Richmond. A whole new group next week to talk about episode 3. I can't wait to listen. I hope you will listen too. Until then, goodbye.